Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of Well, That Fucked Me Up. I am your host, Luke Coulson. Today, I'm joined by not only an old friend, but an old colleague and an old acquaintance and someone that I haven't seen for simply years, and it's awfully exciting, Andy Orrick. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Luke. How are you?
I'm good. We got chatting, didn't we? And then I forgot to press record. And I thought, well, we've probably done half an episode already. But let's get into it. It's so nice to have you on. And we got back in touch because I saw a post that you'd done on LinkedIn. I won't spoil the surprise because that's what you're here to talk about. But the podcast is about surviving life-changing events and experiences. We've had people on who have been in fucking car accidents or huge mental health issues, relationship trouble, abuse, paralysis, operations, all sorts of things, everything. And more importantly, we talk to them about the journey through. Like, I'm not just here to hear people's horror stories and then hang up the phone. What is this podcast? We're here to talk about people's journey through such events and experiences. So with that, Andy, where shall we begin?
Let's get right into it, shall we? So I had testicular cancer back in February of this year. Gosh. And basically I'd gone swimming with my son. And I came back from swimming and it felt like sort of 24 hours later, my right ball had literally swollen up to like four times the size of the other one.
Oh,
and the thing
goodness.
Is, you sort of sit there and you go, like, is this like the swimming? Do you know what I mean? So you go on like fiercely Google, Dr. Google, which is always
swollen ball.
Swollen ball. And what's interesting, because I'd come back from swimming, you look on there and they're like, oh, you can twist it and you can do this and you can, you know, but obviously it was nothing to do with that.
Right.
And you go, I went to the doctor and what was difficult was because I didn't have, I'm going to let all the details out.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's dive in and then I'll go back. But yeah, let's lay it all out there.
But because I didn't have like lumps on, because usually they go, you got like walnut sized lumps on your testicle. I didn't have any of that. It was just very smooth. It was like a sort of like delightful hen's egg where you don't want it. Do you know what I mean? And really heavy as well. And what was really difficult was because Becca, my wife, was basically like, you know, looking at all the Googling as well. And she was like, well, does it hurt?
Yeah.
And the problem is that if you've twisted it or there's a blockage or something like that, it tends to really, really fucking hurt as anyone who's got balls knows.
Yeah.
But actually when it's cancer, I mean, I don't know if this is true for everyone, I'm just speaking for myself, but for me, it doesn't tend to hurt like that. It's uncomfortable. And suddenly you're really aware, because you don't sit there particularly aware of your balls, right?
No.
It's like, but you are suddenly really aware of this thing. And so I went to the doctors and they did, like, she gave me this, like, it was this bizarre scene where I stood in the doctor's room.
Yeah.
And I got my pants, you know, trousers and pants around my ankles as the doctor's, like, examining my I noticed, like, the windows open to the car. And then basically I did this sort of course of antibiotics and obviously that wasn't going to do anything. And then I went for an ultrasound. And then you basically, and then the GP phones you up and goes, I'm going to have to put you in the fast track for the urology and cancer. So then, so it's all this stage of like, which is really difficult because it's a lots of stages of not knowing. Do you know what I mean? And I was brought up in a way where you like, you trust the experts. You know what I mean? You don't sit there question, you like, you're so whatever. So you don't kind of question it. And actually you're lying there and having an ultrasound, and actually you can feel the energy in the room change. Do you know what I mean? You can, the frequency changes. And you're like, well, this isn't good.
Yeah.
But then you're like, should I ask, you know, that like, do I ask them? Have they seen anything?
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, your GP will be in touch, basically.
My
what
God.
Was really mad with that? So I was in the Stoke Mandeville, which, you know, you're getting your ultrasound done in a room. It's all very private. They locked the doors. And so it was this really weird feeling that something quite major was wrong.
Yeah.
And she went to unlock the door, and I walk out the door, and there's literally this poor woman lying on a gurney, who I think was either dead or very close.
Oh,
and you know, and you're like, is this an omen? Is this like a massive omen? No. So then you go and see a urologist, and the urologist basically does a quick examination, looks at your ultrasound, and he was like, yeah, there's a mass in it. We need to take it off.
Bloody hell.
And I had like the biggest whitey I've ever had in my life. I don't know for anyone that has had any sort of diagnosis, but particularly a cancer diagnosis. Oh. Well, I imagine any of them, but for me, you know, cancer, it's like, your body just goes into shock, you know. And Becca was next to me, and she was like, you were literally sweating out of parts of you. You would never, you know.
Yeah.
And I just practically fainted off the chair, and you go, sheet, what, you know. It was just like an overwhelming, destabilizing feel. And then you go for like bloods and stuff like that afterwards. And it's like, do you mind me telling all these little anecdotes?
Tell me. And then I've got so many questions, but keep going.
Right. So basically, once you've had your, like, we're going to take this off. And, you know, bear in mind, even though no one wants a cancer diagnosis, you know, the survival rate of testicular cancer, if you catch it early, is really amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, some people say it's like 95%.
Wow.
And then other consultants are like, oh, it's pretty much 100%. Because we can never say 100%.
Because it tends not to spread. It's in the ball, and you get the ball out, you get the cancer out.
If you get it early,
yeah.
I mean, it basically can, if you don't get it early, it can metastasize. I think it goes to your lymphs first,
yeah.
And then it goes to your stomach and then your lungs. But if you look at someone like, what's his name? Lance Armstrong, you know, he was pretty crippled by it, and his was testicular cancer, but he didn't catch it early.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, he was sort of spread all over. So it can be pretty gnarly if you don't get it. But what is great is that it's, like you say, it's, you know, essentially it's kind of external to the main body. So you can if you take the testicle out, you can actually take the tumor with it.
Yeah.
You know, So then basically I got the diagnosis, and you go downstairs and have bloods done, and we're sitting in the waiting room, and obviously all the emotion comes out, and we were just sobbing, and there was this woman next to me, and she just turned around and she was like, so why are you crying?
Oh my God.
I was like, I don't really want to go into it. I'm really sorry. And then she sort of goes a bit quiet. And then she goes, so what do you do? And I was like, oh, I do like creative work with, you know, music and with brands and, you know. But I was like, but I didn't, you know, when you're just fumbling through your words, just go, please make it stop.
Yeah.
And then I kid you not, I look up and she's got her phone in my face, and she's like, I've got an essential oils brand.
Oh, my.
Do you think the messaging?
Oh my God.
She was like, do you know anything about SEO? And I was like,
lady, not now.
I mean, literally.
Not now, like, lady.
Read the room.
Not now, lady.
Read the room.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
And then I'm sort of sitting there, obviously, in like joggers and Birkenstocks and stuff. And she gets up. She's like, oh, I like your shoes. And I was like, oh, thanks. I mean, to be honest, I couldn't give a shit what I look like. And she looks me up and down and goes, yeah, I can tell. What's happened?
That sounds like something that would be written in like a comedy on TV.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. You wouldn't believe it if it was written in a. And so that was like the first day, and then basically you sort of go through the process and there's all the waiting, and they're pretty good. They're like within 10 days that you know you're going to have it out, but you have to have various bloods and tests, and you have to have a CT scan as well of your essentially. You know, your abdomen down to your groin to make sure it hasn't metastasized anywhere. So that's obviously like a massive, horrible waiting game.
That must be like horrific. Well, I was going to say, I had a friend who had breast cancer, and she, you know, that was the wait. And at one point, they said that it had gone into her chest plate. And we're all like, that's the end of that. She was like, it's stage four, and that's the end of that. And she's like, they're going to let, and then. I mean, this is awful. It's not awful because she's still with us. They were like, oh, it was a shadow on the camera. What are you fucking talking about? She's like, you're good. They were like, it hasn't metastasized and we can remove it all in one go. So for a month, we all thought she was dying of like bone cancer. And it was an incorrect diagnosis.
God.
Can you imagine?
That was it. You know, it was like waiting around for the scan. But because there was quite a delay on getting the results of the scan, I was in, you know, I was being operated on before that. But what was really amazing, actually, in terms of, like, there was, you know, your support network kicks in and everyone was absolutely incredible. And my wife and whatever were all amazing. And we didn't tell the kids at that stage because we were just a bit like, we don't know what this is. So we're a bit like,
But we had to go,
I'm having an operation, but we just didn't tell them what it was. Do you know what I mean? Or we told them I was having a ball removed, but we just didn't go into the reasons why.
Yeah.
But then my friend that I work with, who's a therapist, and I was telling you about earlier, who uses a lot of, hypnotherapy and various other techniques together, he was like, I'm going to get your body ready for the operation. So we're going to tell your body that this is happening. So he, like the night before, he put me under. And then it had this amazing blessing where it's like, we're going to thank the testicle for helping to create two amazing kids.
Yeah.
And for like all of the, you know, everything amazing that it's done for you. And then we're going to see it sacrifice as like the thing that the rite of passage you need to go through to live a life of even greater love and purpose.
Wow.
And he was just like, I'm just going to reframe this story for you. And it was amazing. And then he basically like charged this bit of music while I was under and was like, if you're freaking out, just listen to this and it'll take you back into this state. And so when I went into the hospital, it was like, it was really, and then I was kind of almost like quite sad to see it go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
the sacrificial testicle.
It was a sacrificial testicle, and it felt really kind of like zen and
amazing. What an amazing,
you know what I mean?
What an amazing skew on an experience. Because I've often thought, you know, if you find a cancer somewhere, I can't imagine how impatient I would be of just like hurry up and get it out before it does more damage. Because it's we think of it right as an evil, as a fucking black mass of evil. No one knows where it comes from. No one knows how you get it, but we know that it kills. So I can't imagine what you were going through with having to deal with the patients of. And one question, because I know we have a lot of US listeners, is this all on the National Health Service in England? It's all free. Yeah. And that's just incredible, isn't it, when you think about that?
They were phenomenal.
Wow.
And my whole team that were in the. Because I'm like, you know, it's like Wickham General, in the High Wickham, not, you know, be about an hour outside London.
Yeah.
And they were amazing. And all my team who did the operation. And bear in mind, just going back to your further point, bear in mind with testicular cancer, the reason you can probably do a blessing like that is that you know in your heart of hearts that it's pretty treatable.
Yeah.
I think if you're staring down the barrel of stage three, stage four, stage three, whatever, you're like, you want it out.
Different attitude.
I think it's very difficult to reframe it.
Yeah.
You know, my friend, like afterwards, if you've survived it, my friend calls it the gift wrapped in razor blades. Do you know what I mean? And she had, stage stage three or four breast cancer. You know, it was like, and that's about trying to find the lessons and learning in it that we try and do. But, you know, that's easy to say and hard to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also, yeah, I would never, you know, it's like using words like battle with cancer. It's all the wrong, because essentially if you're delivered the shit sandwich of stage four, inoperable, incurable, et cetera.
Yeah.
That's not a battle. That's not a battle that you're going into. It's like you've not been given, you know, it's like we need to change the metaphor, because essentially it makes people feel like they've failed.
Yeah.
And actually you weren't given a chance. Do you know what I mean? You weren't given a chance. So we need to, I don't know what that other metaphor is, but calling it a battle or a fight or a is really challenging, because that's fine if you've been given something that you can.
Before you go on with the operation and like the actual removal, I've got a couple of questions before we get too far down the line about the original prognosis. When you found the swelling, was the swelling of the testicle, or was the swelling of around, was the swelling around it? Like, what was causing it to
expand? It's the testicle itself. So I basically had what's called a seminoma, which is one of the best. Yeah, you want a sort of seminoma rather than a non-seminoma, because I think the difference is that a seminoma is basically one cell type that's gone rogue, which is your germ cells within your testicle. And your germ cells, but what that means, it doesn't mean they're nasty. It just means they're like origin, like the germ of a kind of, and they create your sperm,
right?
Basically,
right.
So I think that's how it works. I'm not a doctor.
Sure.
And obviously I was slightly under stress.
Yes,
all this stuff.
There wasn't an external lump then. Was that the mass inside?
No, it was just swollen. It was like really swollen, basically, but the testicle itself. But it didn't hurt. That was what's so weird.
Yeah.
It was just heavy. So basically, because of the size of it, it's slightly sort of spread into the walls of the testicle. It's because the testicle is actually just a little sort of slither around the testicle itself I think, and so it sort of ate into the walls of the ball.
Because one would assume, I hope you don't mind talking about your specific testicle. Firstly, left or right testicle? Did you have a preference?
As I'm looking at it, it was my right testicle.
One would assume you had the cancer for a while, and it was at that point, when it got to a certain point, that caused the swelling. It didn't just appear that day after swimming, right?
And actually, there was no just to warn your listeners, there's absolutely no correlation between testicular cancer and swimming.
Totally. It's just complete I didn't take it that way. Really. Yes. But you would have had it for a while, conceivably.
Yeah, I would have had it for a while. And my oncologist was saying that it can, like, be sort of, you know, growing there, and then it can almost like suddenly have a growth spurt.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
That might be triggered by something, but it might be something else. Do you know what I mean?
From that moment to when you went all the way through and the diagnosis and the annoying woman talking about her essential oils to the operating table, what was that length of time?
Oh, that was like 10 days.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really... So basically, you are like, we've got the swelling. Because they didn't know what it was, so you had like a week of antibiotics.
Yeah.
But sort of at the end of that week, she was like, I'm going to say you need to go for an ultrasound.
Yeah.
And then like the next Thursday. So that was like the end of 1 week. And the next Thursday, I was seeing the urologist.
Yeah.
And then they were like, a week on Tuesday, we're going to take it out.
Okay, that's incredible. I mean, that's just incredible.
Super fast.
In the US, you get it done in 3 days, but they would bill your insurance company $120,000. And I'm not even joking with that number. That is how much it would cost, around about. So if you're not insured in this country, you're fucked. You know, and we talk about that a lot on the podcast because, you know, it's crazy. They talk about like great progress in mental health and great progress in physical health in the United States, but you're paying for it. So there isn't great fucking progress in anything, because if I'm not paying an inordinate amount of money for me and my children, we're fucked. And when it comes to mental health, I've been trying to get a reimbursement on some quite serious mental health stuff for one of my kids. And they're doing everything in their power. No, that's the wrong form, or you signed it in the wrong spot, or she's not, you've given us the wrong... I mean, it's been 6 months. No one's willing to give me back. So it's so... It's all such a mess and it's so broken, but that's not why we're talking on this podcast, but that just riles me up and gets me started. So the operation, you were completely under for the operation, and how? What did that look like?
Yeah, while we were waiting, so my team at Wickham General were absolutely amazing and they were all women.
Wow.
And basically, like, the anaesthetist, the nurse, you know, I was just nattering to the nurses, and then the anaesthetist came in and she was like, you're really lucky, you've got like amazing female surgeons. She's like, the women are always the best because basically they don't rush it, they're really diligent. And the men have all got these bloody messiah complexes and just think that they need to be on to the next more important
thing. Yeah, interesting.
And a massive, you know, but they're massive generalization. But they were so brilliant. And I felt so sort of nurtured and supported. And then basically, so we're sitting there just before I'm going into the operation. And I said to my wife, I was like, do you know what? We should probably get a photo of this just before we go in, because just a sort of, you know, a weird like memento of it. So like, I pulled my penis out of the way and I was like, get a photo of this lopsided thing. And then I was like, I said to her, it's like, can you send me the photo?
Yeah.
And she disappeared off.
Yeah.
And when she came back looking a bit sheepish, and I was like, I didn't get the photo.
Oh, no.
And she was like, yeah, about that, I accidentally sent it to the group WhatsApp. The job I'm on.
I sent it to the wardrobe lady who was asking me if we could hit the deadline.
No, so she sent it to the agency, the production company, and it was her assistant phoned her up and was like, Becca, I don't think that was for the...
Oh, my God. Group. That's literally ridiculous. So they've all seen your swollen testicle now.
Do you know what? In for a penny, in for probably about £5 of testicle.
5 pounds of testicle. Oh, my God, that is hilarious.
I know. And then it's that you're basically in sort of recovery after that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And what was weird was I didn't, like, as I was coming out of the general, then they said, oh, we got the results of your CT scan. And, you know, thankfully it's not in your lymphs and it's not metastasizing your stuff. You know, so it was kind of like this double whammy of like having it out and finding that, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then you basically have a period where you have to, each week after the operation, you have to do bloods a week
to make sure it's all gone.
And they're basically looking for your tumor markers to make sure that they're, because obviously, like, you might not have any sort of mass or growth, but you can still have cancer cells flying around, do you know what I mean? Or whatever, that haven't fully. So you have to, so the tumor markers in the bloods are another important gauge. And they basically have to see that they're falling over the 3 weeks. And then basically after that, you go and, because with a testicular cancer, they can't, or they don't biopsy it when it's in you.
Yeah.
Because A, it's extraordinarily painful, and B, I think it can actually spread it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons that if you go and biopsy it in there, risks.
The cells can get out because it's contained essentially.
Yeah, so they don't do, they just go, we'll just take it out.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting because actually, like, they, you know, I think in my naivety, I thought, and this, I'm just going to get very graphic, I thought they, like, sliced your scrotum open and took it out.
Yeah, but that's what I would think.
They basically go in, above your pubic area.
Right.
You've got a slit. It's
you
can't see it on the podcast, but it's like up here, like, you know,
it's like an appendix almost.
Yeah, almost there. And so they slice you there and they go in that way and they pull it out there.
Wow.
Yeah. Then they go, do you want a fake ball or not?
Andy. So no to the prosthetic ball for you.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting with it, and since, you know, it's like we're having a laugh about it here, but it is a really serious diagnosis for a lot of people.
Of course.
And particularly you know, I'm 50, so I'm the top end of the scale, really. It tends to be, I think it's like 18 to 50 or 16 to 50, That's something like that. So it tends to affect younger men. And yeah. I think obviously because it's attached to sterility and virility and all of those masculinity, all yes. those kind of things, that it can be, my oncologist was saying, you know, it's like, it's often the easiest to treat physically, but it can be much more impactful emotionally, because it like really can play with young men's yes. identity yes. in a big way. Yeah. So I've been chatting to a lot of people since, to just being like a support, because a lot of men don't talk about it.
Yeah.
So I've just been talking with different people. And firstly, like, everybody's experiences are so wildly different. The way it's diagnosed, the, you know, all these different things. And obviously, you know, I've got, I think my percentage is like 20 to 30% recurrence in the stomach. But right. that's more to do with the fact that they could have given me a round of what's called, I think it's called BP chemo.
Yeah.
But it's a bit like taking a bazooka to a knife fight.
Got
you know what I mean? Because actually yeah. it's like doing your body
yes.
more damage than it needs to. And actually yes. they can, so they're like, if we did that, I could reduce it down to like 4 or 5%.
Right.
You know, so, but you're probably better off just waiting and seeing. And,
yes.
you know, the chances of it coming back are pretty slim anyway, yeah. really.
Let's talk. Yeah. I mean, I know you're right to bring up the fact we're having a laugh about it. And it's only, I guess, you and I know each other to well enough to have that back and forth. And we do talk about very, very serious and very impactful things on this podcast, and often tinge it with a slight element of humor. But I think what you're saying about the mental impact, something like that, you know, I'm a big football fan, soccer fan. I have to say soccer now because we've got American listeners.
Yeah.
I mean football, Andy, but they think it's yeah. called soccer.
You know, but you know what a football fan I am.
Yeah, no, nonplussed, aren't you? But there's been quite a few cases of players coming out and saying they have testicular cancer, and often they take a year out and they're back playing. So that you're right about yeah. that recovery rate, but the things I've read about that and from some of the professional sports people is this stigma that they feel is attached to it. They feel embarrassed about it. They feel what you're saying about being less of a man. This is literally my manhood. This is literally this is literally the thing that makes me. It makes me fertile, like you said. And I can imagine that's like a real battle. Like, how did you feel about all of that? Did you have those feelings, and how did you overcome those feelings?
It's interesting because I had a slight sort of testosterone wobble, because your body is essentially, you know, your testosterone production has gone down to like one ball rather than two.
Interesting.
And so it just takes a bit of time for your endocrine system to readjust, do you know what I mean? Because it's got to work out how, yeah, I mean, your hormones are just, you know, they can adjust pretty quick. For some people, it can be much more traumatic, and they, you know, then you have to go on to sort of hormone therapies and what have you. But mine was okay in that regard. And I think at the end of the day, I'm 50, I've got two kids.
Yeah.
I've never, you know, like, I don't define myself by, you know, I never have,
yeah. By my balls.
You know, being a stud, do you know what I mean?
Sure,
or whatever it is.
Sure.
So it's kind of, it didn't affect me in that, you know, I've always been a bit of an arty weirdo. So
yeah.
it's like,
yeah.
But having said that, yeah, I mean, of course, it's affecting.
Yeah.
No, it's affecting. It's like, but my way of dealing with that is to talk about it, really,
yeah.
and to write about it and talk about it and.
Because
that's the way I process it.
I think you're lucky, and I think you're lucky that you caught the cancer and that you've survived the cancer, so congratulations on that side. But you're also lucky that you are the type of person that can feel your feelings and talk about your feelings. And I think one thing about this podcast that we've been doing a lot, especially with male
yeah.
guests, we've had some guys on that have been very vulnerable and very open to talking about mental health crisis, breakdowns, depression, suicide attempts. And as much as that sounds like a fucking horror story, all of these people are here to talk about what they were going through at that time and where they are now. And what that does is it just gives hope and strength and courage to people that are listening in, because we do have listeners that are at the end of their fucking rope. And, you know, you didn't see me in this period of time that we hadn't spoken, but I had a 6 years ago, I was about to end it all. I was paralyzed with depression and anxiety and drinking myself to death. And I didn't think I was going to survive that. And now that I have, and my road to recovery feels so amazing. Like, I never thought, I feel better now than I've felt in 30 years about my prospects, about the future. Previously, I was too scared to get out of bed in the morning. The whole thing was a fucking act. I brushed myself off and here I am and everything's great. And I would tell everyone I was fine. And I think what you can do and what I can do is let people know that it is really fucking great to talk about these things. And there are always, always people that will listen and want to hear it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's like, for me, that the way it kind of went was, you get that initial, like, unbelievable hit of fear. And then you get into this, you know, it's like the only thing that can sort of help you mitigate that fear is love in some way, shape or form. It's the only thing that can do it, you know, and you get into this like extraordinarily base kind of binary that's going on. Do you know what I mean? And the love doesn't like, you know, neutralize the fear. It just helps you manage the fear.
Yeah.
And it helps take you. It's like a hand that takes you through the fear. Wherever you find that in whatever, whether it's your dog or your friends or, like, you know, nature or whatever it might be. And then, and so you go from that period. And don't forget, in the beginning, it's really like everything is measured by, like, got to do bloods on this day and this. And everything's a bit like they're regimented and you do this thing. And then once you come out of the, you know, once you know that essentially, you know, the prognosis is pretty good and all of the rest of it, then, like, where I went was, like, which is where I will always go, and it's not always the best way to go, is to try and find meaning in it in some way, shape or form. So then I'm like, you know, like, change your life. And, like, and it's been, you know, I have to say, on that respect of, like, making you really understand what is important in life and need to, like, what living with understanding your own finitude is all about is really important. It's like that amazing book by Oliver Berkman, 4,000 Weeks, which is all about, you know, it used to be the productivity wonk for the Guardian and tried every bloody, you know, productivity, Silicon Valley productivity thing on the, and then he realized that all of it is a trap, you know, and the only thing, the only way you should live your life, essentially, is, without sounding really dark, is knowing that you're going to die. And knowing that the choices that you make are the choice, you know, and feel good about those choices. Do you know what I mean? So if you want to sit in your pants and eat Snickers all day, then that, make that a choice in your life. But ultimately, it's about living your life meaningfully, but know it, but not, but understanding that all of the things that are on your to-do list or are on your, like, aspiration list is probably impossible. And that's not to try and, like, quell ambition. That's about, like, bringing a sense of, like, realism into your life. And actually, yes, there's a bit of mindfulness in it, but also, like, that idea of always living in the present is impossible as well. So, you know, anyway, that's a bit of a digression. But what is interesting in that book that really resonated is, like, you know, people that have had some sort of, like, life-changing event tend to, the finitude is, like, brought, you know, like, your mortality is sitting there with you at the table. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so it's one of those things where you learn to go, okay, I've maybe got whatever, you know, the book's called 4,000 weeks. 4,000 weeks is an 80-year lifespan. Doesn't sound very much when you put it in weeks.
It really doesn't, you know? Does it? Wow.
You know, and, and it's interesting as well, you know, because then you go, like, if you think that, like, where, what you pay your attention to is also what shapes your life. Do you know, that's all like, your life is, really, is what you decide to pay attention to.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. If you decide to spend 7 hours staring at TikTok every day, that's not only shaping your life, that, like, you've only got 4,000 weeks.
Yeah.
So
wow.
What do you want to, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
Like, is that, if that is a valuable use of your time and you, brilliant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
yeah.
It isn't.
Yeah.
Maybe have a rethink.
It's
but anyway, so, but the thing that was interesting around that phase is when you're like trying to find the meaning in it, what you're actually doing, or what I was actually doing that I didn't realize I was doing, I was going on like a kind of deep spiritual quest with this. But then what I was actually doing was just suppressing the raw emotion that comes with it.
Yeah.
And then a few months afterwards, I just felt really low and wow. really depressed
of
and
course.
Really, you know, and actually that's when you realize that the emotion that's actually attached to
yeah.
the, you know, I've had cancer. Do
yeah.
you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like it's,
yeah.
you've crossed the Rubicon into
yeah.
like
yeah.
you're in cancer land.
Yeah, fuck. Now,
it's a big deal, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Bloody hell. Well, and it's just to wrap up, I mean, a lot of stuff you were talking about is perspective as well, and that's easier said than done.
Mm.
But, you know,
totally.
I think, like, what my experience has done over the last few years is just allowed me to ground myself in a slightly more positive perspective. Because you can
yeah,
have...
Yeah, absolutely.
You can have someone that, you know, oh, my fucking tomatoes fell out my bag and they've squashed on the floor. It's the end of the fucking world. And you're like, oh, well, I've survived cancer last week, and you're like, oh, and then suddenly
yeah.
that person probably feels a bit stupid about complaining about the tomatoes. But it's the things you let get to you, isn't it, at the end of the day. I'm just
yeah.
fascinated with, like,
and I'd also never minimize somebody else's
yeah I think that's fair to say
stuff.
Yeah,
and I think that's the, you know, if you're dropping your tomatoes
yeah.
is spinning you out,
yeah,
then who am I to judge
yes.
the reason why you're letting that
yeah.
spin you out?
Well,
there could be a perfectly valid reason. Do you know what I mean?
There's probably some underlying trauma. I feel like I used to yell.
Yeah.
I feel like I used to yell at the tomatoes. I was just deeply unhappy, you know? So I think you're right.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah. If you are traumatized and yelling at tomatoes, again, we're not meaning to take anything away from that. But Andy, we should wrap up. This is, I don't know what to tell you. This has been wonderful and amazing. I hope it's gone okay for you.
Yeah, it's good. You know, and I think I would just say it is really tough for people. It's really tough for people. And that's the one thing that I've learned through this experience, that everybody's experience of every type of cancer is different.
Yeah.
You know, that I've learned. The other thing I've learned is, like I was saying earlier about the fact that we need to change the metaphor, whether I was saying that before the podcast or after, but we need to change the metaphor around cancer, away from this idea of it being a battle or a fight or whatever, because it just makes people that don't stand a chance feel really shit about themselves.
Yeah.
You know,
we need to,
I don't know what the other metaphor, a better metaphor it is, but the battle metaphor is probably not it.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, however difficult and painful it feels to talk about it, it is the only way through it.
Yeah. Andy, thanks. It's been brilliant to talk to you, and lovely to see you again. And Andy,
lovely
Orick,
to see you too.
Andy Orick, thanks for coming on the podcast and sharing your amazing story. And we'll see
no
you
problem.
Soon.
No problem. Yeah. And if anyone wants to buy that lady's essential oil brand,
yeah, we'll put that in there.
I'll have to find it.
We'll put the show notes. And Andy's now working for that lady, selling the essential oils. Yeah. Any information about Andy and a little summary of this will be in the show notes, as always. And thanks again. It's been brilliant.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.